Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. The more information you have, the more you know. You know, and today I'm going to bring you more information. Today I want to teach you about something, a word that gets tossed around quite a bit, paranoia. Paranoia, you know, what is paranoia? Paranoia is far more common in the general population than you think. A new study by a guy named Jonathan Fickles of the New York Times, he said feeling paranoid means harboring unreasonable suspicions of people and situations. A person who is paranoid might hear people laughing in the next room and assume the group is laughing at him, or view a casual glance from a stranger as a threat. When doing a further investigation, they found that there was a good percentage of the population that personalized a lot of things that happen in the world as if having meaning against them, as if there is something meant to hurt you. We want to look at why somebody would develop paranoia, what paranoia is, when is it paranoia, and when is it not. And we want to look at what you might possibly do about it, and many of the forms of it, which include an amata paranoia, which is about love paranoia, and another one which is about ambition paranoia. We're going to get to all of these. These are really incredible. First, let's start off with the idea of paranoia, you know. Vigilance. Vigilance is an attribute. It's a thing you get. If you're growing up and we're surviving, we're coming out of the jungles and we're becoming humans and we're learning to swing in the trees, and we as humans don't have the weapons that the tigers and the lions have, so what do we have? We have our brain. And what does our brain do? Our brain spots things. It sees things. It interprets things. It could tell you. It could compare past events with potential future. Our mind starts to work. Now, every animal is vigilant. If you've ever seen a deer drinking water, as soon as it hears a rustle, it picks up its head. Is there trouble here? You know, is something going to happen? Birds are very vigilant. You know, they're very nervous kind of animals. And if something just startles them, they move away. Vigilance. Because a bird knows that if it stands still, it's likely to get pounced on. See? And a bird's great skill is to move. And a deer's great skill is its speed and agility. So it combines a perceptual acuity with a physical body that could respond immediately. Humans, on the other hand, we have the ability to see, but we don't move as well. Deer are much faster, much more agile. Birds just fly away. We're kind of stuck on the ground, you see. So what we developed was a more developed mind that could spot and see things. This vigilance is part of our survival. And you're glad to have it. If you're there and you're taking care of your family and there's, you know, and you hear 9/11 and you hear something happened and you're trying to watch out, you're glad that you could call up your vigilant self to take care of the people around you. When does vigilance turn into paranoia? You think it's around the time that you're putting masking tape on your windows to prevent disease from coming in? Do you think it's about the time that you really get afraid of everybody? Do you think it gets to be the point at which you cross over from being afraid and cautious and vigilant to imagining things that aren't happening? That's what paranoia is. You're making it up. Paranoia is simply you're making it up. Vigilance is an awareness, an alertness, perfectly fine. Paranoia is when it is you start making it up. Now, paranoia, if you think about it as an overriding condition, paranoia, most of us think about persecutory delusions, meaning somebody believes somebody wants to hurt him. But paranoia goes much deeper than that. Paranoia develops, it evolves. Paranoia It's a systemized illusions that has prominent characteristics. And some of these characteristics are that there is something that is out there to hurt you. It's the delusion that's gradually organized out of a mass of erroneous but original beliefs and convictions, you know. So it's kind of, you get a whole bunch of thoughts, put them all together, and you wind up, somebody wants to hurt me. So it happens also that periods of remission, you could have times where paranoia completely disappears, and then it comes back all of a sudden. What they found is that there are parts of the human brain, the nuclear abacans, which is in the forefront of the brain, part of your sensory mechanism, which makes you have a more heightened or less heightened sense of paranoia. Some people are more nervous and more worried than other people. The idea of paranoia and the idea that having paranoia is that it is progressive. Paranoia, once it starts and it keeps going, if not interfered with, is progressive. And it gets further and further, because you can imagine if a person is afraid that somebody's out to hurt them, then they start imagining that person's out to hurt them all over the place. So if you start hearing the neighbor upstairs who's rustling and slamming their feet on the ground to annoy you, and you believe that the reason that person is doing it is because they wake up to annoy you, they want just to hurt you, it's usually paranoia. Now, of course, if I'm saying this to you and you're one of those people, you'll say, oh, no, it's not. Because a paranoid person also has ideas of reference. They can go to anything and refer to it and say, there's the proof. See that sign on the wall that says, no good A? Now, that could mean no good anything, you know? But it could, you'll see it and see, that's my name, A. It's Armand, it's no good Armand. And that's what they're saying on the wall. You will find things. You will find references, and you'll support your belief system, and you'll tell people about it. You will tell people around you, no, this is true. Going back to the person upstairs, because I see a lot of cases where people come in talking about their neighbors and how their neighbors purposely make the noise when they come inside the house so that the noise will disturb them and wake them up, how they almost invariably kick the door or knock over a garbage can just to wake them up. The idea, once you get started in it, once your mind gets locked into paranoia, it just can't stop. And it can keep adding to it and adding to it and adding to it. So one of the first stages of paranoia is this persecutory ideas. These ideas that people really want to hurt you. They want to hurt you, and there's a plan to hurt you, and they're working to hurt you. It's called persecutory paranoia. It's you might even have hallucinations. You may actually see things or hear things that go there. But, you know, some of you know people who are paranoid. They're shifty-eyed. These are people who are suspicious to a fault. And you know them, and you see them, and you kind of excuse them for a moment, you know? You kind of let it go. You may date somebody for the first time, and he says to you, I was working there, but, you know, I caught what was going on, and I got out of there because I knew what they were planning to do. And then he goes on to have the rest of his conversation with you over lunch. Most people will overlook a paranoid reference. I mean, I wouldn't. I would ask, oh, really, tell me more about that, because I'd want to hear what was going on. But most people, when they hear somebody being paranoid, will kind of overlook it as a quirk. Ah, he's mistaken. They're not talking about it. But really, if we were to listen and serve two people here, serve yourself and serve the other person, the person who's caught in this trap of paranoia, what we would do, and the thing we would do, is listen more closely and ask for information. And not ask for information by challenging. We don't want to challenge the information. We want to ask for information by asking for information. Tell me more about it. Tell me a little more about that. How did that happen? But don't challenge it. Try to get the information from a person to see what they're saying. Maybe that person needs help. Maybe they need help from you. Maybe you've got to guide them somewhere. Maybe you've got to say to them, hey, you know, I love you very much, but I notice these ideas that you have about people, I think they're not accurate, and I wish you would find some help to talk to somebody about it. Maybe that's what you would do. You know, you might find your own mate doing that. People go through changes through life. Your husband, your wife may become paranoid. And they do, you know. Things could happen. You could go through menopause and become paranoid. You could go through childbirth and become paranoid. You could be a man who loses his job and become paranoid, believe that there's a plot against you. You can get an IRS letter, you know, and believe that there's a plot against you and somebody's scheming about you. So persecutory things, suspicions, you know, suspicions about other people and their minds, that's one level of it. Now, at this point, when you first get the suspicious part and you get a person who does this, they become pretty obvious. And after a while, they dig in. And they become curmudgeons. Curmudgeons? Curmudgeons. And they become really, you could just see them, sourpusses. Trouble with paranoia is it has potential violence underneath it. Because there's a part of you, if you believe that you're under threat strong enough, you're going to strike out. Almost invariably, almost every one of the killers that we see that go out there doing mass murders will find a threat of paranoia. They actually believe there was somebody coming after them, and they were striking back in their own way. So paranoia is something to be watched for. It's to be seen, and it's also to be appreciated as one of the body's defenses. It's one of the ways that the mind is defending itself. Now, what becomes really interesting is these two other cases called the ambitious paranoia and amatory paranoia. I want to talk to you about that. Ambitious paranoia. You know, after a long period of persecution, a change in the symptom of paranoia itself could set in. And in some cases, the intensity of the belief becomes modified. But what happens, and this is called, in psychiatry, this is called delusions of grandeur. And the way it happens, it first appears faintly, but gradually it increases in force until you ultimately supplant the delusion of persecution with this delusion of how special you are. At the same time, the disagreeable hallucination of people trying to hurt you fades away, and you're replaced by almost auditory hints that you are great. Now, the interesting thing about people who have ambitious paranoia is they have a voice telling them very often that they are meant to do something, that they are a messenger, that they should be out there and preach, that they are meant to do something, that they have a mission. A voice tells them. This is a form of paranoia, a common form called ambitious paranoia. It could be, and it gets further and further. The emotional basis of ambitious paranoia is pride, and every phase of human vanity and aspiration is represented in the delusion that these people have. It's not so logical, but you're a belief that you're a messenger, that you've been talked to by a divine authority, that you are meant to conquer the world. And I see many people who come in with some kind of plan that they believe they've been given. So let's see how it starts. It starts off as a kid. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, by the way, talking to you about a complicated subject in psychiatry called paranoia. It's something that we generally don't talk about much, but I figured the more you learn about it, the better off you're going to be. Spot it, see it. Deal with it, learn about it, forgive it, be kind. Ambitious paranoia. Ambitious paranoia, you can almost see yourself as being a divine, like you were gifted, like you were meant to be something. You have the sense of privilege. And even though it just, you know, you could see it on American Idol. You see ambitious paranoia a great deal. Because you see sometimes in the amateurs, they come up and they have this incredible belief in who they are. But they're amateurs and they're not very good in their amateur status of being a singer or something or other. And you wonder how they got there. It's a form of paranoia. That person spent their time in the cellar practicing. And what they were doing is they were at one point, they were just in the cellar lonely, and they thought they weren't good enough for the world. And then they heard a message that they should become a great singer and they should go on American Idol. They watched it on TV, and a voice came in and said, you could do that. And it flips the negativity of the paranoia and the persecutory paranoia into an ambitious paranoia. You know any people who have got ambitious paranoia? Who really believe that they are greater than they are? And they believe it almost like they are totally convinced and nobody could tell them any different? There's a lot of people in religion like that. It kind of attracts them. There are a lot of people who become ministers and priests and teachers who are, when they're preaching, you can see that in their preaching, because if you think about it, most preachers are perfectionists. In many ways, they're talking about good. They're talking about the difference between good and evil. They're talking about how they represent good. Well, if you represent good, then you must know bad. And therefore, you go from what I'm saying is the early paranoia, which is the persecutory one, is you know about the evil of people. And then the ambitious paranoia takes over so that now you're going to cure all the ills by being a godly person and putting your hands on people and healing people and making everybody better. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. We will be taking your calls later today. Ambitious paranoia. Now, there is a not uncommon form, which is a combination of ambition and persecutory, in which the subject believes that he is a man or woman of unbounded wealth or power. And you believe that you have a power, almost a superpower, a power to read minds, a power to do things, and you have the power to heal people. I mean, I very often wonder, I've seen some gurus going out there wearing white robes, putting their hands on people and saying, you know, rise. And the people, some people get better, and then other people say, what do you mean, rise? And it's like they believe they have this power. It's a combination, but that's a form of paranoia. When I see it, I see a crazy person. You see, when I see that person who has this unreal belief in themselves. In general, the ambitious paranoiac is not very troublesome because they don't do very much. You know what I mean? They're just out there saying that they're great, believing that they're great, and everybody kind of looks at them and eventually disses them and says, yeah, go ahead, go on your way. Right? They don't knock them down too much because if you knock them down, well, you may throw them back into that other persecutory stuff where there is trouble. That's the person who wants to get revenge. Many of them, however, while living in society, are liable to give expression to their delusions under the influence of excitement and behave so strangely and unconventionally that eventually they wind up taking them, putting them away, and locking them away. You know, so in other words, when you see Moondog out on the streets, you don't know who Moondog is, do you? I'm looking at somebody here in my studio who doesn't know who Moondog is. Can't believe it. All right, those of you who know Moondog, we'll talk about that. Moondog was a guy who dressed like a Viking, who walked around the streets of New York as a Viking, preaching peace. And his name was Moondog. He was a fabulous character. This in the 80s, 70s and 80s. Moondog, yeah. Two more forms of paranoia that I want to address. Amatory. Or amatory, A-M-A-T-O-R-Y, paranoia. And the other one is litigious paranoia. You ever hear of litigious paranoia before? You, as a mental health professional, did you ever hear of litigious paranoia? It's there. Guess what it is? It is also called paranoia quarrelans. Makes sense. Quarrelans, as in Latin, to quarrel. This clinical form of paranoia presents uniform, organized, opinionative, persistent, stubborn, aggravated, litigious behavior on the part of somebody who's trying to get even. Somebody who is working against you. Somebody who has got the kind of a mind that puts everything to bear on revenge. Revenge and striking justice. Unfortunately, many people in the anti-war movement are often filled with litigious paranoia because they are striking for things, but they're striking with an energy that's so much. And then there are people on the other side who represent the other side who are suing all the time, too. People who become adjutants. People who become adjutants very often don't have a choice. They become adjutants because they are filled with this paranoia, and they're crazy with it. I'm going to sue you. I sue you. I sue everybody. I had a man, I remember a man who lived downstairs from where I used to live when I lived in an apartment. He lived downstairs, and he was suing everybody. He sued everyone. I mean, and no matter what, he sued the guy who delivered groceries. He sued somebody else. He just brought actions against it. Now, here's the trouble. Person who's got a litigious paranoia generally has an organized mind. And their organized mind is a single-focus organized mind. And because their mind is organized enough, they can present a case against someone like you whose mind is relaxed, doesn't get as organized. So that when they say to you, when they want to line up the ducks and they have every receipt and they have every moment you talk to them recorded and they have this, all this information, they present it against you, and there you are saying, well, wait a minute, I didn't spend all this time defending myself. So what happens with litigious paranoia is they always win their day in court. They will bring you down to the courtroom, and the judge will give them a judgment because they have everything organized. The judge won't give them a judgment. The judgment will give them a right to appear in the court. But because they are so nuts in the way they present it, and the anger is so intense, and what comes out is viciousness, they always lose. All you have to do is show up. I mean, they don't always lose, but they very often lose, because when presented in the court, by the time they get past the court, they're not in such hot shape. So once the courts, once they get into the courts, they're doomed. Neither the loss of the case nor the payment of heavy expenses have any effect on disheartening them. They just go after it more. I'll strike an appeal. This is becomes your raison d'etre, your reason for being, is this lawsuit. I'm going to keep fighting it and keep fighting it and keep fighting it and keep fighting it. I had a friend who used to tell me all the time, sue him. And I have another friend who's an attorney who says, listen, if you're ever going to hire any of us, he said, think 100 times about it. You don't want to be in the courts unless it's essential. Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're talking about paranoia and different forms of paranoia. We talked about litigious paranoia. We talked about ambitious paranoia. We talked about persecutory paranoia. And now I'm going to talk to you about amatory paranoia. Amatory paranoia. A distinguishing feature of this one is it has something to do with love, supposedly. Some of them believe that they are mystically married to a person. I'm really married to you. And I feel I'm married to you in the ethers. Usually it's a person who you're married to who's in a prominent social position. So they're usually not so available to you, so you feel connected to them. The fact that they may have never spoken to you, or perhaps never even seen the person in person, is immaterial. The conviction that their love is reciprocated and their relationship understood by the other person is unshakable, and they basically base on the supposition that you're in love with them. The object of affection, if not mythical or too exalted a position to be approached, is often persecuted by the admirer, who takes every opportunity of obtruding personally or by letter the evidence of an ardent adoration. The situation thus created can become complicated and embarrassing before it becomes realized that the persistent wooer is insane. You must have all had this sometime in your life. You have somebody who just wouldn't get off your case. You're really mine. You really belong to me. I really, you know, you're really my only, my one and only, and it's the one and only, one and only stuff. Nice to hear it, don't you think? It's nice to be important to somebody. When you begin perceiving this of somebody who has this amatory paranoia, right, when this begins to happen and you don't recognize it and you feed it a little bit by taking a phone call or saying, having conversations, yes, I'll meet you for coffee, you feed it more. The failure of their schemes or repeated repulses may, in many cases, turn it back to persecutory paranoia. So in other words, once they see that you reject them, they go into a paranoid mind, and do you know what they very often do? They don't pick on you. They say the reason he or she won't love me is because somebody won't let them love me. And they will pick on your mate. So if you're married, they might likely kill your mate. Because they're convinced if they go into the persecutory state that it's your mate that's holding you apart. Because they can't believe for a minute that it's you that's holding them apart. Now, this all sounds pretty weird, right? This all sounds like it's really out of the world. Well, I'll tell you, it's much more frequent than you want. For people of you who have been fixated on someone in love, did you lose a relationship and you couldn't get them out of your mind, and you try to figure out how am I going to get them back, what present will I buy them, what gift will I give them for their birthday, it all crosses into this kind of amatory, persecutory kind of paranoid place. When you sit at home and obsess about how am I going to get him to love me, how am I going to get her to love me, and that's all you think about, that's the growing fertile petri dish, you know, for this kind of stuff. And, you know, we got to talk about it. And I want you to talk about it. Some of you may know about it in yourself. You probably have lived with it. You do recover from it. There's a couple of different ways of recovering from it. Psychotherapy works when you have somebody to talk to. Behavior modification works, somebody. Sometimes medication works. There's a whole bunch of things. Sometimes it's based on some real chemical imbalances, you know. But we need help when we see it. And it's not to be overlooked. And it's not to be scoffed or pointed at or accused. You know, don't point your finger and say, you're paranoid. That's the worst thing you can do to somebody. They'll bite your hand off. You know. So, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a break. And then after our break, I'm going to play you a little music. And then after that music, I'm going to take your calls at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. Keep in mind, when we talk about a condition such as paranoia, it's very easy to take it and try to apply it to anybody. But we're talking about a fairly serious level of it when we talk about paranoia. We're not talking about worry. Worry is one thing. Paranoia is when you believe that something exists that doesn't exist. It could be feelings exist or intention. And one last thing about paranoia. I've often wondered to myself why people become paranoid. Why paranoid? And I've always found this to be true. That underneath every person, paranoid person, is a person who feels insignificant. If you feel insignificant, what a better way to feel significant than to create somebody who's thinking about you all the time? Let's say you're the kind of person who nobody thinks about. Let's say you live in your apartment and nobody even knows that you're in there. Wouldn't it be great to think that your neighbor upstairs considers you important enough to want to make the noise? At least you're important to someone. So very often what you find is paranoia is loneliness. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you in a couple of minutes.
I got some so-called friends. We'll be right back.
Simon with you. Couldn't resist this one, too, just to bring to you. Here's another little thing that comes out of my archives.
I want you to know you're getting better. I don't care what everyone's been saying. You're getting better. They're the ones who've been getting worse. And they don't like what you've been doing, understandably. Do you think they can watch you strip yourself of one unnecessary thing after another, day by day becoming more, so to speak, naked, more free, and not feel the way they do? Of course not. It's painful to get rid of things you don't need, and they know it. They wouldn't be saying what they've been saying if they didn't want you to stop. They want you to be the way they are, and to stay that way. You think they can stand to see you not doing what they're doing? Why do you think you're being investigated right now? Why do you think you're under maximum security? You know the answer. I don't have to tell you. They're afraid of you. It's that simple. They're afraid of you because you're becoming less and less like them. I'll tell you what's happening to you. You're coming closer and closer to the far away, closer to the unknown. Do you think they like that? Not on your life. So don't get nervous and start asking for help. That's exactly what they want you to do. Make it on your own, the way you've been doing. And remember, you're getting better. Excuse me, now I have to go. I'll just dissolve right here in front of you. See you.
See you. What archives? What archives? This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. That's Ken Nordine from Word Jazz. Had some unusual insight into the human mind. This is 212-209-2900. We're talking about paranoia. And we're talking about people who worry too much about what's happening to them and why it's happening to them and who's doing it to them. You know, jealousy can be a form of paranoia. You know, wondering where he was last night when he didn't call you and obsessing about it and letting it upset you so much. Wondering where she is and who she's talking to is a form of paranoia when you see it. When you see people who are crazy jealous, I mean crazy jealous, you know what I mean by crazy jealous, two things usually happen. One is your jealousy is usually unfounded, but the other is that some part of the energy that you put into focusing on the other person's infidelity eventually creates the infidelity. It's almost like you make it born. Your jealousy sometimes creates the situation. It's almost like it's a disease. It's like it gets very convoluted with people. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi. Armand.
Yes.
Excuse me. I guess the first thing, there's an old expression, if you think you're paranoid, if you're paranoid, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not out to get you.
And, agreed.
I find it a very important topic right now in the state that we're in. There's surveillance cameras everywhere. There's people who try to do any kind of activism or act like a citizen and carry out their responsibilities are generally not treated very well. We don't have the rights we used to. And politically speaking, if you've been to Stalinist countries, authoritarian countries, this place is looking an awful lot like what those were back in the World War II period. And I think that to some degree there's a very good reason to behave in a fashion to try to protect yourself from what's coming down the line.
Good. What's your name?
Michael.
Michael. Michael, look at what's happened. Yes, not only that, but not only surveillance cameras, now we have identity theft, right? And we have things you can't trust. You can't trust your bank. You can't trust your mortgage. You can't trust anything. And what's beginning to happen is the matrix is falling apart. You know, we're beginning to see that, you know, that which we've built and we're comfortable on. But instead of seeing it as them doing it to us, I see it as us, me having done it to me, that I've been a part of this. Now, when I perceive myself as being an active player in the reality that I created, I put less stress on what they're doing on the outside. Now, here's another reason that I take this position. I know that whoever it is that wants me not to protest would have no greater the desire than to have me paranoid. Because the way the government works and the way that the oppressors work is to have you afraid. The Ku Klux Klan wears white sheets to scare you. They carry burning crosses to scare you. You want to be paranoid. They want to see you walk on the wrong side of the street, on the other side of the street, or get in the back of the bus. Just as nowadays you are being frightened and intimidated by cameras and civil rights violations, and you're supposed to walk around so shy and so gun-shy that you will not become an activist, and you will not take your position. So I there's a part of me that is, maybe I just feel immune, you know? I feel like, oh, what are you going to do to me? I've been around here a long time. Come and get me if you want to. But I am not going to cower. I am not going to live in fear because someone else designs the fear. Yet my brother or somebody next to me or somebody close to me who might have a fear based to his personality, he might become afraid. So I don't tell people, don't become afraid, but I'll say it's as much a manipulation, you becoming, them developing a paranoid world, as it is the actual threats that are out there, because paranoid people are functionless. They cannot rebel. They can't get things done. So for you and me, sure, there is a reality in this world. Is it a communist world? Is it a third world country? What are we? We're a mess. But I'm still a free mess. And I feel like I'm still free in this mess.
Well,
I feel that changes are taking place, and I'm a part of it.
I pretty much agree with all of that. And the question then comes down to, if you want to do something good, if you want to push things into a positive direction on a social, on a society level. Communication is obviously, well, according to the New York Times, every email and every telephone call is banked someplace. And how does one successfully organize?
I hear Michael, because, you know, and you know, as far as I'm concerned, so what? So keep my phone calls and keep my emails, because I'm not doing anything, an email or phone call, that I would feel ashamed of or I feel you would hurt me with. And if you did try to hurt me with it, okay, I'll deal with it then. And I understand, but I'm not going to go their way. And their way would be, whoever their way is, get so afraid that you won't do it. Remember, the idea of, or the dysfunctional idea of democracy, the idea of democracy was to establish people competing against each other, and competing against each other and not getting together. The disadvantage of democracy is that it's a competitive society. We don't want people to get together. It's the people who get together that generally overthrow the people in power. So it's, if the agenda is to scare me into being afraid of the people around me, you're not going to get me. I'm just too old for that. You know, go get the younger folks.
I mean, but when you do act as a citizen, carry out your responsibilities, you do act in a way that is what would have been normal maybe 20 years ago. It doesn't necessarily encourage others. I mean, I would like to be able to convince people of exactly what you just said. I don't quite know how to do it. Don't be afraid.
Just live it. It's to live it, and it's a certain kind of sense, Michael. I can give you an example of this, the medical profession. You know, all the physicians I know are afraid to help somebody if they get hurt on the side of the road. They're afraid of getting hurt, some of the physicians. I have other friends who are physicians The minute somebody gets hurt, they brush right over. I'm a doctor. Let me help. Mm-hmm. Now, you know they're going to get sued. You know this thing is going to happen. You know they're going to get in trouble. But they say, I don't care. I'm taking the high road. Mm-hmm. And if I take the high road, it's going to work. And you know something? The high road works.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've seen. And where it doesn't work, in a couple of cases where it doesn't work, okay, the system is faulty. But the high road works. And you, Michael, are a part of it.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
Have a good one.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Let's take another call.
Hi, how are you, Armand?
I'm great.
This is Susan calling. Thank you, first of all, so much for your show.
Thank you, Susan.
And before I forget, one thing I want to say, I hope one day that you'll have a music show either online or on the I mean, your music is amazing. Somewhere.
Well, listen, there's a scheme here. There's a plot here.
Mm-hmm.
There must be a way, mm-hmm. and I don't know how to do it yet, but if you were to go through somebody has got to do this, and I know Tom doesn't have the time to do it, but if you went through all of my archives,
mm-hmm.
you would get the archives and you get the individual selection I've played every day on every program that I've done, and someone, maybe it's you, Susan, will make a list of that, and then someone will make that list and put it all together into some massive file that we could use to download onto your MP3 player, and you would have all of this music over and over again, like listening to Paul Simon just now coming out of nowhere,
right?
And stuff like that. So the information is available right there on the website, thepositivemind.com,
all
the music I ever
played. It's a thought, but I still think you should have a program just purely music, because
I would love
the variety
of
music you play is amazing. Anyhow, thank you so much for doing this show. Yeah, this has definitely touched a chord with me. This is one of my heartaches in life, unfortunately. I'm kind of at a crossroad or health crisis myself in terms of trying to heal through this process. My mom... I forget which one she would be, but definitely paranoid delusion. An incredible human being, incredible woman in the arts who's really has met a horrible decline the last 2 years, and it's been so painful. She had a very successful business. She, now either is homeless or has relocated, probably literally for like the 80th time. She moves so frequently. It used to be a very specific paranoia that she seemed to contain and would deal more so outside of the business. The last 2 years, I guess maybe because of age and because I guess there really was no treatment for her. I think she is a very loving, manipulative person, so she would see different therapists and different doctors, and I think one hand wouldn't know what the other one was doing sometimes. So it was never clear to me whether she was really medicated or taking her medications. I know she talks about constantly being one of those lithium babies of that era. Librium, is it Librium? I think it's Librium. Maybe it's Librium.
Well, Librium or lithium. Librium was a tranquilizer. Lithium is used for manic depression.
Okay, so that's lithium, excuse me. And I remember her way back when she was much more coherent, speaking about the whole thing. Many women in theory, like a lot of doctors, seem to use this drug for a lot of women that were considered, like, hysterical or over-emotional. I don't know if that's true.
That's
or
Librium.
Not. Is that okay? Is that what Librium
that,
is?
Librium was like Valium.
A Valium. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's harm. I'm not sure which
you
one. You
say, give me Librium or give me death.
Right. Maybe it was a tranquilizer. But she's succumbed to this really horrible place right now. And make a long story short, the last 2 years I did, out of frustration, but also because of literally fear of her hurting herself, I never felt she was suicidal. She was the kind of person that definitely was literally the kind of person that she would move. She would hear someone on the rooftops or in her room. I won't get into some of the very descriptive, graphic things she would speak about or talk about that would happen to her at night. That was obviously unnerving to hear these things.
You heard paranoid hallucinations and delusions.
Right.
You heard things that you knew were not true. She was flipping into a form of dementia or psychosis.
Exactly. But it was interesting. It was very one specific sort of paranoia. And recently, because maybe of age and maybe not being treated, it started to affect her business. People in her business somehow were becoming part of it. The town she was in was part of it. She eats out because of it. The restaurants were part of it. Everybody, the circle was closing in more and more. And I was concerned because I think she was being sleep deprived. She was up all night. I think she probably.
So what are you saying? Do you help her in some way?
Well, I'm at a crisis where I have to say that it's a horrible place right now. Right now, for the last few months, I totally have disconnected myself, which is very hard for me.
And what's her relationship to you again?
Her single parent. We're very, very close.
Your friends.
Oh, this is my mother. My mother.
It's your mother.
My
right.
mother. Excuse me. My mom.
Your mother. Now listen.
Yes.
Is there? I guess your mom doesn't have any room for you to sidle up next to her and say, "Mom, we got to find some help because you're living in too much torment."
This is what I would like to try to do. Others have tried it, and she definitely gets that thing where that viciousness, she turns on you if you don't believe her. But it's interesting because I think there's been enough love in her for me still through all this. I've always been the one that I would listen, but she was very clear that my stance was that I didn't believe this.
Here may be a way in, okay?
Yeah, but she's been kicked out right now. Like I said, I think she's living in some room. She's lost her business. The paranoia has moved in. And what happened recently, I tried to make a long story short, have the hospital help me to have her commit it, which was so hard for me to do. That was one
sure.
of the most, the concept of even doing that, you feel like you're turning on your mother and betraying. You know, and I grew up from that era where, you know, of course, like you take care of your
parents.
Okay,
and what happened?
Anyhow, it was a nightmare with the hospitals. I learned the whole thing with HEPA, which I understand why it exists, but it really sometimes
sure.
hurts those where really you need to delve in.
Just one more thing. Where
sure.
does your mom live? What town?
She's in Long Island. And the hospital, she had a legitimate injury, and the hospital refused to, but someone from the psychiatric department stepped in.
I'm going to need to ask you specific questions and just ask a specific answer without giving me too much information.
Yes, yes.
When I ask you what town she lives in, you know, you give me a town. If I ask you where she is, because what I'm hearing is if she's in Long Island
yeah.
and you are in touch with her or not in touch with her, maybe there are certain social services that me or some of my assistants can help you
okay.
with. And I have people here who know Long Island who will donate some time to you
okay.
just to help you look and see what might be possible.
Okay. Can I know. I feel like one of those people. Can I just squeeze in one more thing?
Sure.
And I'll give the specific. The one thing that was really hard is that someone did come in, quote-unquote, to rescue, to admit her. And the same person who understood my reason for doing this and finally kind of saved the day literally ended up turning on me 2 weeks later.
I understand.
And that became, and I had to let go of the situation because it just burnt me and they burnt me. So she's in.
So who
America.
Helps you? I mean, who do you see?
Do
you have a therapist?
I had a therapist. I hadn't been going because I felt like.
Are you in Long Island?
No, I'm in Brooklyn.
You're in Brooklyn. I have somebody for you to see.
Mm-hmm.
I have somebody for you to see who would be perfect resource in helping you find what's necessary and keep yourself in balance at the same time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, okay.
You know, I mean, it's really it would just be a remarkable, a good source for you, somebody who won't consider you to be crazy, but will also work with why you get so helpless and powerless in the middle of this
mm-hmm.
and help you deal with it a little more. So I would like you to... call my office, and I'll give you that referral.
Okay, okay. And what is that number? I'm sorry.
212-757-4488. Yeah, let's see what we can do for you and your mom.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
I appreciate your help. Thank you, Armand.
Sure, Susan.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking another call next week, by the way, just for your information. We just learned that Wednesday and Thursday are the hearings on the Afghani returnees, and it's just... BAI is going to take them and play them for 2 days. It's going to be quite a remarkable thing. So we won't be with you for next week except on Tuesday. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi. You're on the air.
Hi there. It's David here.
Hello, David.
Well, look, this government surveillance, it works on me. I mean, I'm scared. You're not going to get me out in the street marching with signs or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Argentina and Chile, you know, how many people they killed, and how many prosecutions have there been on those people? Like zero?
Sure. No,
like zero. And then you say, I'm too old. Just look what we're doing here. In Iraq, we're buying these people for $5,000. They're 80 years old. They're 15 years. That's 8 years.
Wait a
old.
Minute, David. Back
scary
it up.
As hell.
Back it up. The main thing you've got to say is you're saying the following. You know, Armand, it scares me and it works on me, and I'm afraid. You are afraid, right? It's okay. You don't have to be paranoid to just be afraid. I mean, they certainly have done enough to scare you that fear is an appropriate response.
Well, let me say this.
And it's not to invalidate anything that you're saying. You know, I mean, you're It works. When they pound on you, it works, uh-huh.
Let me say one other thing
here.
If Bin Laden did his stuff because he hates our freedoms, you know, then if Bin Laden has any brains, he'll have another, and seeing what kind of loss of freedoms we're getting now, he'll have another 9/11 between now and the election, and the military has already said they'll take over at that point if that happens. And that is very,
you're pretty sure that's going to happen, huh, David?
I'm not going to, I say Bin Laden, you know, but
no, but I mean, seriously, and it's, I'm on your side. Have you isolated yourself so that you're not a victim of that when it happens? Have you moved yourself out of the city and gotten yourself a safe environment where you could be? Have you protected yourself in some way?
I could go to Canada.
But not could go, but have you?
No.
I mean, what are you saying to yourself? You're saying, I'm afraid that any minute now they're going to come in bombing and killing and doing all this stuff because of what we've done, and it's going to happen between now and the election, and you're scared.
Seeing what's happened so far, yeah.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
Well, I don't put it beyond, quote, Bin Laden.
Hey, one more question, David. Do you have family?
Yes.
I mean, is your family close to you?
Yeah.
Or do you feel like you're alone in your understanding of this? Because it must be hard
fairly,
to talk to you.
Fairly alone, but a lot of people, you tell them what's going on, they don't believe anything.
Of course. So you feel very alone, right? And that's what I mean. And it's,
no,
it's,
I don't really feel alone, because there's a whole lot of listeners here who feel the same way.
Okay, so that's a good thing.
We're the community.
Good thing we have WBAI.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot for calling in, David.
Okay.
Right. But that's a little bit of what I said about the position of when your cautions get to that level, you know? You kind of dig in because you really believe there's nobody to trust because it's happening all around you. Hey, my friends, this is Armand DeMille with you at Deposit of Mind. Hope you learned something from today, understood it a little more. And we will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more good stuff. Special thanks to everybody. If you want to hear today's program, you can go to thepositivemind.com or WBAI.org. Very often has the website and the archives up immediately. Bye-bye for now, my friends.